Your ATM is safe. If your banks are safe, there's enough cash in the financial system, and there is an infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve. An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve.
An infinite amount of cash at the Federal Reserve. Don't you want somebody
to love? Then I would sell my Bitcoin right into this rally. And believe me, I hadn't been a believer one time in Bitcoin. Not here, not now. Find somebody to love. Don't you?
On this trend has been margin called.
The view was a hook, trust to go out of now they got me shook. Believe in the crooks, hell of the same. Are they cooking the books? Save up a decade, and I'm set a day. Now the little rent just getting away. Big of the bag, big of the rep. When it all blows off, it is you who will pay.
Behind the ass, it's not just a test. Pull back the curtains, so what do you get? And it's the risk with a big tippy net. Made from your savings, that's 401k. Give it to the other side of the trade. Socialized loss is why we've in the game. First to fall in this reckless war. Cause it's just a pawn of difficulty in this game.
Money talks and pay for the show, pay for the crowd, pay for the thrill, pay for the media to lie to our face. Taught the tricks so we repeat our mistakes. Sell us a dream that never delivered. Already fees, including the tickets, siphoning funds from the mouthless bigots, blind leads blind to the all complicit. Money is cheap and addicted to growth, commingled with risks that nobody knows. A hire will go to a damaged collateral, another excuse for oppressive control. The government captures part of the play, reapers of value at the end of the day. We're calling for help, but nobody came. We're bailouts for poor ones who complain.
Money deeply rots at the core. Don't believe intentions are pure. This crypto contagion stems from a system that incentivized fraud. As schemes get more complex, and fallible humans left unchecked. Playing the dark is how you get wrecked, and our economies are largely.
What would happen if we take the money out of resistance? Why protest our labor when we get pulled out of capital? Where would we be if our money enriched us? Simply by holding purchasing power. How do we build a base? Replace the controlling effects with the world of free markets.
Build an independent system to remove the risk of corruption.
Step 2.
Move the savings into their system so no one can ever touch it.
Step 3.
Unsaved, venture, and all activities move this way. With our own money, everything changed. We no longer positive to
you again. Money is not a pure one. When that's just going to politicians, coming and capturing part of the place, and leaving the value at the end of the day.
So we can move value without being censored. Move on from gambling, saving. Move on from all the politics. Move on to the end of the internet.
So we don't have to just be what they say. So the freedom and money can be taken away.
So we treat and punish all the same.
So we can get the control of this game.
When the truth will break the frame, now our perspectives forever change. Truth is the key for us to reclaim.
Open the door, get to the game.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Tuesday, and welcome to episode 97 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and I have to say I am extremely excited for today's episode. I'm sure if everyone's kind of like me, you do have a thought or a dream of having your own little Bitcoin citadel somewhere remote, somewhere out there where you just have land, peace, your own little cabin. And so I am happy to say that today we're going to have one of our BVs, Bob Van Kirk, talking about his Bitcoin citadel and how we got it together. So with that, I want to go ahead and say good morning, Bob. How are you doing?
Good morning, Coleman. Good morning, everybody. I am excellent again today. Let's see. It is Tuesday. Can you believe it? And yeah, excited to talk to everybody about the Orange Pill Retreat.
Yeah, and again, we were talking about this over the weekend in one of the chats, and someone was just bringing up questions, and I always remember that you had this, so I just want to make sure, I just want to pick your brain with this. So I have a ton of questions. For everybody that's listening today, I want to invite you to come up here onto the stage, to the panel. If you have questions you want to ask Bob, Feel free to fire away. The only requirements or requests that I have is just no shit coining, and then just keep it professional. So if you want to come and request to speak, just go ahead and send a request in and I'll bring you up on stage. Just some little in-house notes really quick. Operation Bitcoin is having their free veteran class. So it's teaching you everything about Bitcoin. There's a link up in the nest. I believe there's only one or two spots left. So if you want, if you're interested or you have a family member who is, wants to learn more, they're a veteran, active duty, or if they're a spouse, go ahead and sign them up. The spaces are limited, but it's going to be a fantastic course. So you're not going to want to miss that. Just do a couple quick shout outs. Shane and AC, I'm going to send you guys some invites if you want to come up here today. You're more than welcome to. But we have Hunter in the audience. Good morning. We have Miss Penny, Miss L. We have Chivas. I got Good Vibes. I have Captain B. I have Pura Vida. Let's see. Bitcat. Sean King. Idoti. I think I said that right. And Blake. And Blake. Sorry. So good morning, everybody. Well, Bob, let's go ahead and let's just start diving right into it. And just kind of what made you want to start this with your group of friends versus just doing it by yourself?
Yeah, so just to give a little bit of backstory, I think, you know, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, we have a bunch of thriving meetups. And so, you know, some of them meet weekly, some are monthly, and then some are as the leaders want to hold meetups. But there's a lot of us from a variety of backgrounds, ages, and experiences that, you know, have become friends. And, you know, maybe not all of us are close friends, but we, you know, we all have this Bitcoin ethos about us. And so, one of the members of this, this project, as we'll call it, it was kind of his dream, something that he had, you know, been thinking about for a long time. And he has a little bit of a real estate background, where he had, you know, invested in some properties and, so on and so forth. And so he had brought this up to a few of us. And, you know, in all honesty, like I have real estate experience as well. But in all honesty, I thought he was nuts. I was like, there's no way, like it sounds nice. It's a pipe dream. There's no way that I'm going to do this. I don't want to get into partnerships with other people. Everything I've ever done has kind of been, you know, mainly on my own, or maybe with one other person, much less a whole group of people that it would take to pull this together. But he continued to, despite, you know, maybe, you know, I was being nice, but I didn't really think, you know, that we could find the property, let alone the, you know, the capital to do it, especially amongst Bitcoiners. 'Cause you really think about this, you know, a lot of people would say, well, hey, you know, Coleman, you started out the show saying, hey, let's invite people up. Let's see who wants to ask questions. But no shit coining. And so some people, in the community would look at a property like this or any property as a shit coin. But I think that there's, you know, some arguments against that and there's some utility to it. And, you know, as I kind of go through this, maybe, it'll cause some people to think a little bit differently. I don't really want to get into arguments with people about it. What I want to do is just cause you to think about, you know, the purpose of doing something like this, or maybe some of the reasons you might want to do this. But the property is probably the biggest thing, right? Something that's doable. I think the property, you know, aside from the people, is probably the biggest thing. And so, one of our members, the guy whose harebrained idea this was, said, hey, I think I found a property. And I was like, oh, here we go. And, again, just kind of blowing them off, but at the same time saying, hey, you know what? I'm a man of my word. I'm going to, you know, go look at this property with you, with a real estate agent. So we went and took a look at the property, and I when I saw it, I was like, man, this really could be something, but now we have to get, you know, the people, because I'm not gonna, you know, it's not gonna be me and one other person on a property like this. Obviously, I'm a Bitcoiner too, and so don't want to part with my stack to acquire another property. And so we started telling the story and taking it back to the meetups and just explaining, you know, what it was and the idea behind it. And because we had the property, it made it so much more real for people. We had a property in mind, I should say. And so we ended up over a couple of weeks, holding basically, field trips or showings, of the property. And so, we were able to, invite people, from the meetups who had shown interest. And it was kind of like, well, you know, there's going to be people in the groups that are going to say, yeah, it's a great idea and blow us off. And there's going to be others who are going to be like, yeah, I'm totally out. And then still others who are serious and willing to take the time, you know, on a weekend to come up and take a look at the property. And so, it was just surreal to me. This is about a 30 acre property, that is adjacent to a bunch of state land, state owned land, about 140 acres of state land, that the state really hasn't used, since the 1940s. So it's a unique property, on some water. And what was surreal to me was, as the process went on, I just remember a bunch of my friends, you know, Bitcoiners, people from these groups, some of them closer than others, and their families, sometimes some kids, sometimes spouses or girlfriends who I had never met before at the meetups, walking this property, watching people walk out to the river, which is probably about 250 yards from the house that sits on the property. It was just kind of surreal watching like this big long line of people walking down, towards the river just to check out the property. And, I kind of knew right then that we could make this happen if we really pushed for it. And so, this would have been fall of 2023. So we're probably, I want to say like September, October timeframe. And, we had, you know, some work to do, right? If this was going to all be put together. And so one of the big questions and the concern of the, you know, some of the people that were really interested in doing this was, you know, if we're going to do this, we got to do it right. And we want to get it set up legally so that everybody's protected. And so, it's not just protected from, hey, my investment, but also from a corporate structure standpoint so that we can protect our privacy. And so I'll try to share a little bit of some of this stuff, and feel free to jump in with questions, Coleman, or anybody else that wants to come up, you know, request to come up on stage, and Coleman will add you, and we'll take any questions. So I don't want to drone on too long about this stuff, but
well, maybe Bob, explain for everyone who might not be familiar with the reason why you set up corporate structures, why that's so important to protect yourself and protect everybody from different things that could happen.
Yeah, I think one of the big concerns is privacy. You know, if we all believe that Bitcoin, which these folks do, that Bitcoin is going to be the base money and is going to appreciate handsomely over the next few years, anyone who would be, you know, involved in something like this wants to protect their anonymity to the extent that's possible. And so that's one thing, but then also from just protecting your investment, right? Like if you're going to put money into an entity that controls a property, you want to look at it from the liability side. What kind of liability do you have, you know, in case something goes wrong? How could you get out? And I can go through some of these things too, but this can all be spelled out in a legal agreement. And so like when you start a business with other people, which this really needs to be looked at that as, you need to have an operating agreement. And so I can go through some of the details of that, some things that you want to think about. But also, like, as important as the operating agreement is the structure of the entity. And that kind of goes back to the privacy piece. So just to kind of lay out for people the way it was structured and the way, you know, I can't give legal advice, but the way you might consider doing this for yourself. And just for the benefit of everybody, if you or some of your friends want to get together and do this, you know, our hope is that we can open source this a little bit. Now, we don't have it all together yet, to be honest, where we've redacted all of our information and can send you, you know, our operating agreement. But eventually, like, you know, if somebody comes forward that wants to really dig into this, we'd be happy to share, you know, the details of some of this stuff. You know, obviously we would redact, some of the information. But you'd have basically a foundational structure for, you know, how you could organize this in a private way. And then also what an operating agreement might look like, based on your situation. So just to cover the entity structure, we actually formed three entities to acquire this property. And so I'll try not to talk too fast on this because it's a little confusing, especially if you're not, I guess, seeing it. And so maybe we can compose a few tweets about this in the future just so people can see it. Again, if you're interested, feel free to DM me, or we actually have the handle for the OP retreat up here, the Orangeville retreat up here as a speaker, just so if people want to follow that handle, you'd be able to do so as we develop the property and post updates, might be a good thing to follow if you're interested in this topic. So, entity wise, you may or may not know this, but the state of Wyoming has a special way that they treat limited liability companies. So they have this Wyoming Limited Liability Company Act, and it really focuses on privacy. So Wyoming will not give up the information on any of the members or managers of LLCs. Now that came into question a little bit with the Corporate Transparency Act, where everyone who had an LLC was asked to provide information on members, owners, or managers of LLCs that were at least 25% owners or more. And now that's been, you know, held up in the courts, gone back and forth. But right now, as it stands, that information still is not required. So we had chosen Wyoming as a place to create the entity. And essentially what it is it's a holding company. Okay, so it provides, the purpose of it is to provide anonymity and also a place to hold our treasury, which I can get into later, but essentially the treasury, the excess that we raise, and again, I can get into this more, is being held in Bitcoin, on behalf of the members. So essentially you have a holding company based out of Wyoming to provide privacy and anonymity for the managers and members. And the purpose of it is to really hold, the treasury and to just really be this entity that is, private. Okay. And what you really end up setting up is an operating company that is, its sole member is this Wyoming LLC. So this property, it's like, you know, it's probably out there on X anyway. This property happens to be in Oklahoma. And so we needed to establish an LLC in Oklahoma that the sole member of this, so the one that controls this Oklahoma LLC is the holding company out of Wyoming. And, you know, we can get into why that is, but this is just a good way to do it to protect privacy again, but allows you to operate in the state that you're in. Here's where it gets a little bit more complicated. We actually acquired the property with a trust. So this would be the third entity. So you can call it whatever you want. But we have this trust that we created, and we did that with the help of an attorney. And the attorney, in order to maintain privacy, was the initial trustee of the trust. And so that the reason we did that again is for privacy, because when you acquire a property like this, someone needs to go to the title company to sign the closing documents, the paperwork that get put on file with the state, that you're dealing with. And so, initially we created this trust with the help of, an attorney who was then the initial trustee. And, the beneficiary of that trust was not the attorney. The beneficiary was the LLC that we had established in Oklahoma. Okay. So I know this gets a little hairy, like in terms of the way your mind's thinking about it. And even for me, I have to review it because it is a little confusing. But after the closing, what happened was, the trustee, which was the attorney, her name's on all the documents. Her address was used for the mailing address, all that stuff. She actually resigned as the trustee, and we had it set up so that the successor trustee, so the second trustee or the next trustee, once the attorney resigned, was the Oklahoma LLC. And remember, the Oklahoma LLC, the sole member is the holding company out of Wyoming. So this, again, protects us all from exposing really who we are. And it's not like we're trying to do anything illegal. It's more just this focus on privacy, right? So I've outed myself. You guys know I'm part of this, but you don't know the name of it. And so maybe that protects me a little bit. But the idea is here, you know, the structure is really, again, just set up to, you know, protect the members. And so we have it set up in a legal fashion where, privacy is protected because of the Wyoming LLC, but then the beneficiary and the trustee of the trust is this operating entity in the state where the real estate is. So I'm going to pause there because I know that's a lot and it's convoluted. But I'm going to pause there and see if there's any questions, and then I can move on to maybe the operating agreement without getting too boring and having people fall asleep here on a Tuesday morning.
No, I'm tracking with you, on this. I understand the importance of it. And again, if you do have a business, you should really look hard into creating, it's not a shell companies, but these different layers of protection, just because when you own that company, you're held liable. If you don't have the proper, you know, documentations or structure in your company, people can come to you directly. So you want to try and as much distance yourself from this so you're not held directly liable if something were to go wrong. But also we talk about you should treat your Bitcoin like it's, you know, it's 10 to 100 times worth what it is. I'm very glad to see that you did this with your property. Like again, if Bitcoin does what we think it's going to do, you want to make sure that you guys have like a little place where you're not doxxed or people don't really know how to find you. So I completely understand that. But AC, do you have any questions on this? We can't hear you, AC, if you're trying to talk. This goes for anybody in the audience. If you do have any questions for Bob, feel free to go ahead and request to come up on stage. I'll be up, and feel free to fire away. Again, I think this is very, very, good information to have, especially because a lot of us, you know, we like to think, you know, several years out and to create a structure like this where you can go ahead and have your own little place to go, whether you want to do it by yourself or if you want to do it with a group of friends so you can acquire a bigger piece of land or just makes more financial sense. I think it's really good that we're having a discussion and picking Bob's brain on this. So without anybody requesting, or AC, if you want to just jump in right now with a question. But Bob, I think I'm going to move in and just kind of start asking the next question. If you can disclose it, how many people are involved with this?
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, what we wanted to do was obviously get enough investors or capital, and really what they're called is, legally they're called members. We wanted to get enough members to acquire the property, you know, at the price that we thought we could get it at. And so it was kind of a funny way of going about it. You know, if you've ever purchased a property on your own, trying to get a bunch of people together to do this is a little bit difficult, because you haven't made an offer yet on the property for the price that you want to get it at, but you also don't have the money to actually do it. So it really, does come down to, you know, making sure you're communicating well with everyone and then, you know, securing the funds. And so we ended up with 8 investors, and, you know, we essentially set it up in the operating agreement for, some flexibility where not everybody had to come in at the same amount. So there's varying degrees as to how much capital, people, would need to put in. One of the things that we wanted to make sure though is we didn't want to crowdsource this to the extent that there we'd be dealing with, you know, 100 people, because it just gets too messy with trying to keep, you know, everybody happy, communicating with everybody. It just becomes too expensive and time consuming. Despite, you know, the technology we have to communicate, it's just difficult to get everybody together. So 8 people. And what we did in the operating agreement was establish basically capital contributions and units. So we defined this in our operating agreement. And so people might find this interesting. If you make the threshold for entry too low, that could lend itself to some problems, like I said, because you'd have too many people. So what we did was we basically said, like, look, if you're interested in this, you know, we want to make sure people are serious. And so what we did was set the basically 3 levels that people could contribute and become a member. And so essentially these 3 classes of units, and again, these are not shares. These are units. And that's just, you know, the legal way to do it without having to register it with the SEC and all that stuff. We had 3 classes. And so the first one was non-voting units. And so the minimum for a non-voting member, so you wouldn't have any voting rights, was to acquire 10,000 units. And each unit is worth $1. So, you know, we did set it so that, you know, some of the members of our community could come in, but they just wouldn't have a say. They would have fractional ownership, but they wouldn't have really any voting. We'd listen to them. They could, you know, talk, and we have that all outlined in the operating agreement. So we'd listen to them. They'd have us like a voice, but they wouldn't actually be able to vote. Then we have members that are holding voting units, and those voting unit members would have a vote for every 25,000 units held. Again, each unit would be $1 in this case. And so it would take $25,000 minimum in order for you to participate at the voting level as being a voting member. And then we also created a 3rd level called managing units. And so managing members would hold a minimum of 75,000 units. So if someone was kicking in at least $75,000, then they would qualify as a manager of the company. And so that's really, I think, maybe the basics of how we set it up. And, you know, you can change the numbers for anything that suits you. This was just maybe based on some of the feedback we were getting from talking to people, and also trying to structure it so that, again, with people being interested in doing something like this, you know, you want to show people that you've thought this through, that you're not just like, hey, let's buy a property together. Woohoo. you really have to, show people that, again, their investment is protected and that you're, defining a lot of these things that people really maybe not haven't thought through. Maybe they like the property. They've seen it. They like, you know, the people that are involved and that they want to participate, but you know, you want to show people like, hey, here's how we protect the investment. Here's how we protect you. And here's how it's structured to, give us, you know, all the benefits of owning this property. Then we also like just one more, note on this. We did set an ownership cap. So we set it so that no member, was allowed to own more than 25% of the voting units. So someone could come in and acquire more than 25% with the money that they put in, the capital they put in. But, the way it's outlined is that their voting interest would be capped at 25% if, someone came in at more than that with their capital investment. So once again, I'll stop there, see if, that makes sense to you, Coleman, or if you have any other questions about that part of the structure, I guess.
It makes sense, but I definitely have questions about this part of the structure. Someone sent in a message before we started on this. Just so going back to the three entities that you created, you had one in Wyoming, one in Oklahoma, and then you had the trust here in Texas. Did you have to have a resident from Wyoming to create the Wyoming LLC, and same thing for Oklahoma, or you just did it as out of state?
That's a really great question. So another way to register these and keep them anonymous, so to speak, is there's actually something called registered agents. And so these are actually entities in these states that these states, if you read their limited liability acts or statutes, they require registered agents. And so I think it's as simple as, if I remember correctly, I think it's WyomingRegisteredAgent.com. You can actually go and set up your own Wyoming LLC privately anytime. You have to pay them on a monthly basis. They handle a variety of tasks for you, but it's required. So unless you're someone that's a qualified registered agent in Wyoming, you would be using one of these services to create your LLC in Wyoming. Same goes for, Oklahoma. You can actually be a non-resident in Oklahoma and establish, but if you want to protect your privacy, then, you can use a registered agent. I don't believe it's required in Oklahoma. As for the trust, we had protected ourselves again because we, in the state of Texas had used the attorney as the trustee with her mailing address. So, hope that answers that question. Did you have, other ones?
I have a ton of questions. Again, if you're in the audience and you want to come up here and ask a question, please come up here on request and I'll send it, or just send us a direct message and I'll read it out. Really quick, if you can, what's that monthly fee in Wyoming?
So it's more of an annual fee. So they have like an upfront, I want to say, if I remember correctly, it's like $250 initially, and then they charge somewhere around $1.25 a year to essentially re-register for you, because you have to, you know, re-up your registration every year. And then, you know, they're getting all the mailings, they're communicating with you saying, hey, we got a document from the state on your behalf. So they're kind of handling all that. And what's cool is they're not just like a registered agent pushing paperwork. You know, they have online systems where you can log in, download your documents at any time. So they're also, you know, scanning, your documents into their portal. And obviously they're delivering this service at a cost. So, it's beneficial though to use these registered agents, and it's not that expensive.
So it's 1.25% on total value of property?
No. Assets? $125, sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry. That was my bad.
So yeah, it's really, really inexpensive. You know, if you look at it, $250 to get set up, and then $125 renewal. $125 in renewal fees every year, which includes a registration fee that you would have had to pay to the state anyway. It's reasonable.
Yeah, definitely. So then going back to the units and the way that they're tiered, if I just wanted to come in and just be able to go to this property, with that $10,000 or the 10,000 units or $10,000, does that allow me unlimited access to the property at any time, or are there restrictions? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, we had put in provisions for, how the property in the operating agreement. Again, this is all where everything is kind of laid out. And so it's a little complicated. I can tell you ours is just, you know, for people's, visual is 13 pages long, which may seem exhaustive, but you really have to cover all of these things. So one of the questions, obviously, that Coleman's asking here is, do you get unfettered access to the property? We had put a clause in there allowing us to use this property for, short-term rentals, so like an Airbnb, but also for longer-term rental, like a tenant lease agreement. So currently, we have actually set it up so that there's a tenant occupying the property, which does complicate things a little bit. Right now, it's giving us time to sit on our Bitcoin treasury and have some cash flow for, you know, keeping up the property without having to add additional monies to it, and also, you know, allowing us to, I guess essentially, the idea is to hold on to as much Bitcoin as possible in the treasury for as long as possible. So right now, just based on how the operating agreement is written, we had a provision for when it's leased, in a long-term lease, that people wouldn't have unfettered access to the property. Now, what I can say is that one of our, I guess our tenant is one of our members. So that complicates things a little bit too, but it also makes it a little bit, I would say more flexible, because the heart of this person is to, you know, invite people up as much as possible. So anytime anybody wants to go up there and use the property, you know, we've built a gun range. We've, you know, improved the property in several different ways. There's some off-road vehicles up there now. So just different amenities that we've been able to take care of, initially just to make it interesting. It's kind of an interesting situation because, you know, we're getting, income from a tenant, but the tenant is very open to people coming up and using the property. If it was an outside tenant, which most of the members of this are not really looking for, at this time, then, you know, obviously you would have to have an interesting lease agreement with that tenant that kind of outlines like, who gets use of the land, you know, when can we enter the house, all of those different things. So it's a unique situation. And at some point we may not have a tenant, and that's, you know, kind of the intended plan. But what's been great since we closed on this property in December of 2023, so it's been just over a year, is that this entire time we've had a tenant. And as we've gone to fix things, we've been able, you know, we've had expenses, and we've been able to cover those expenses, including, you know, property taxes, insurance, repairs, so on and so forth, with the, rental income, that we've been getting from our tenant, who happens to be a member and friendly to, having people on the property while they're living there. So, now to answer your question, Coleman, on the 10,000, if we didn't have a tenant, the non-voting member, again, this is all spelled out, actually doesn't get access to the property, like without approval from the managers, and that person would, need to pay, and this is separate, but there's like basically a, outside of the operating agreement, there's kind of like the rules and regulations. And essentially the way that's set up is to just say, you know, you would need to pay as like a short-term rental, to have access to the property. So we haven't really had to cross that bridge yet because we've had a tenant, but, there are, you know, there's a cost to using the property as like quote unquote an Airbnb or as a hotel, which just makes sense, from the standpoint of, you know, wear and tear and, you know, needing to keep the property up in case, you know, you clog a toilet or anything that would come with owning a property would happen. We also have, you know, have to have insurance. And so there's a cost to that. And, so it's only right to have a member, especially someone at that level, paying, you know, a nightly fee to use the property, if it wasn't, you know, in a longer term rental situation. So I hope that answers the question. Do you have another one?
I've got tons. I'm worried I'm going to run out of time before we get through them all.
All right. I'll try not to be too long winded on my answers. Sorry.
No, you're good. You're going in detail. That's what I want. And I think that's what the audience wants as well. So then is there monthly or yearly dues for everybody, or is there just dues for different tiers?
Yeah, great question. Great question. So the dues, are made up, basically we split them up into quarterly dues, but thus far the last 2 years, we've just paid it all up front, for the entire year. And basically the way we set it up was that, for every member who has voting, so that would be 25,000 or more, you would pay $75 in maintenance, quarterly maintenance dues. And so essentially, you know, just to kind of look at it, if you had 25,000 units, you would pay $75 a quarter. So you're looking at $300 a year. And again, the initial idea was, hey, we're going to want to do some improvements along the way, and we're also going to have some expenses along the way, whether we have a tenant in there or not. And so, we don't want to dip into our Bitcoin treasury. And so the idea would be, you know, let's all contribute to the dues so that you can, not tap into the Bitcoin stack, and then also, just be able to provide for ongoing costs, that would be associated with, you know, owning a property like this.
So then I'm just did some quick math. If you have 8 members and you're collecting roughly $300 a year, you guys must have an ag exemption on this property, right? Because it doesn't look like that would cover the property taxes.
Yeah, that's a great question. So, again, I'm a little foggy because it's been a year on the exact acreage. Again, it's approaching 30. But if I recall correctly, 2 acres are set aside for the house, and then the rest of it is all ag exempt. And so we actually do have someone who bales, there's woods on it, but there's also a hay field. And so we have someone who bales the hay once or twice, or maybe even 3 times if it's a really good season. Last year there was a lot of rain, so we ended up with just 1 cutting, and we'll actually get paid something on that. Now, to date for last season, we actually had a Christmas / 100K party up in December up there, and a bunch of people came. It was, you know, open to the community of Bitcoiners in DFW and their families. So it was a good turnout. It was fun. But we still had the hay bales sitting on the property, and hadn't been taken away. So we haven't gotten the income from that for 2024. But you know, that's an additional source of income. And yes, that bigger chunk is ag exempt. So the taxes, property taxes are exceptionally low. That wouldn't be the case in all states, obviously, or in all situations, but for this particular property, it was one of the main benefits to buying this chunk of land along with this house.
Okay, thank you for that. And then the next question I would have for you is, get all the members, decide up all the units and what they want or what they can afford,
and then you go through and you purchase this property. So just for easy math, let's say the property is $1 million. Correct me if I'm wrong, but usually just for, well, this had a house on it, so you probably, again, you don't have to get into details, but let's just say you had to put down 20%, so you had to come up with $200,000. Did you make sure that you had more than that to go ahead and put enough money for a down payment to acquire the property? And then did you put extra aside for just Bitcoin?
Yeah, it's a great question. So what we did was, it was kind of like working it backwards. So one, you have to figure out what you think you can get the property for, right? What price? And then you have to kind of go raise that money and hope that you can raise in excess. So what we found out is if we had just tried to raise, the capital required to purchase the property, just the initial discussions that we had, it didn't seem like Bitcoiners were too keen on just straight up buying a property and having a Citadel, to be honest. That doesn't mean that wouldn't be the case now, you know, in your situation, but for ours, it just seemed like, yeah, that's a good idea, but you know, I might be thinking of it as I'm either giving up Bitcoin to invest in this, which I don't want to do, or I am, I'm using capital that I could use to buy Bitcoin, to get into this property. And so what we quickly shifted to was, what if we tried to overfund this purchase? And so, essentially what we did was start explaining to people that, you know, we want to overfund this. We think we can raise it based on, you know, the initial few people that showed interest. And so what we tried to do was essentially oversubscribe the purchase of the property. So, you know, in your case, let's say you were trying to raise $1 million to buy a property. You know, we, you know, wanted to make sure we could get to that million, but then also, you know, see if there was interest to have a Bitcoin treasury with some excess, which would give everybody, you know, distributed, and proportional ownership of that Bitcoin treasury, so they'd still share in some of the upside of Bitcoin. And so essentially what we did was, you know, you had to find some key people that wanted to come in a sizable manner, or at least, you know, in our case we did. And then it's kind of funny in the community, once you have a few key people, then there's other people who will come in just because of that. And so it's kind of like the FOMO thing, and I don't want to sell it like that, but it kind of happens that way. And also what we found was that, people were far more interested in doing something like this if they still had exposure to Bitcoin. And so essentially what ended up happening was, we ended up with 75% of what we raised was used to acquire the property. And, you know, pay for attorney's fees and stuff like that. And then, 25% of it went to a Bitcoin treasury. And, that has proven to be very successful for us. I think that Bitcoin, I haven't looked recently, but it's somewhere around 2.5 times what it was, you know, when we acquired the property. So maybe timing is everything on this, but, you know, if you're looking at Bitcoin in the long term, we're kind of looking at it saying, you know, our Bitcoin treasury should be more valuable than the property at some point, despite the price appreciation of real estate. And, you know, you look at it from Bitcoin being only 25% of the overall in, and yet it will eclipse. I think it's a great story for people. Like, whether it's you're interested in the real estate portion or you're just interested in, like, how could Bitcoin be going up so much? Like, I think we all think about Bitcoin in relative terms. And so this for us all, has been a good, aside from like the dollar, it's been a good, just benchmark to look at this type of investment and say, man, you know, we started out with 75-25 and now we're sitting here a few years later and Bitcoin is now, you know, 50-50 with the real estate, or maybe at some point it flips, 75 Bitcoin, 25 property. So, anyway, that's kind of where I'll leave it there. If you want to ask more questions on that, I'm happy to kind of go more into it.
I do. So I think about this as like, so Bitcoin appreciates and you can go ahead and let's say that for some reason something happens with the property, you need to make major repairs and your quarterly funds or yearly funds aren't going to cover it. Do you dip into that Bitcoin as kind of like a savings to go ahead and make those repairs? Or if you're like, you know what, you know, Bitcoin's doing great. It's now instead of 25%, it's 50% of the portfolio. Let's go ahead and let's allocate some of this and let's build a couple new houses so we can generate more revenue or let we have like a little weekend getaway for everybody.
Yeah, I love it. Great question. This is actually, you know, where I see the biggest possible pitfall for this situation. And I don't say it to say, oh man, I'm looking negatively at this. I'm not. I'm just saying like when you're in with a bunch of people, it's easy to own a property, as easy as it sounds, which maybe to some of you, it doesn't sound easy. And you know, to some degree it's not. But where it comes in is, okay, now we have this treasury. Like what do we do with the money, right? Like do we hold Bitcoin forever? You know, I'm getting older. Some of us feel a little bit older, and we're saying, hey, maybe, I want to be able to use this. Hey, maybe my kids are going to be gone soon and I want to be able to use this property. And so we should develop it out. And so I think, you know, we're all coming into this with eyes wide open. And what we want to do is obviously hold Bitcoin for as long as we can, but we also do want to develop the property. And so, you know, we all have different kind of ideas about that. And so repairs, obviously we want the upkeep, but we want to go beyond repairs. And so I think the vision for this property is to either go, you know, I think there's a lot of different ways we can go. One would be, you know, the one that I would like the least, which is just basically give distributions to people that are members in Bitcoin, at some point. I think that is not the reason most of us got into it, but it would be an option. Another option would be to take the treasury and cash it out, pay the taxes on the appreciation and, you know, build tiny homes and then get income off of that to sustain the property or even eventually pay out dividends or add to back into the Bitcoin treasury. And then another option, and I think some of us like this idea, would be to create almost like a conference center or like a convention center. And, you know, my hope is that we could actually do a little of both. But, you know, the vision for, you know, some of us, probably I would say a majority of us, is to make it a place where, you know, people can come out and hang out and do different activities, right? There's got to be amenities there, but then also a place where we can use, where we can gather, and have not just parties and celebrate, the price appreciation of Bitcoin, but also, use it for educational purposes. So I could see a mix, you know, depending on how the treasury goes and our timing on things, where we start, using it opportunistically to improve the property, so that it can be more used for encouraging, you know, some of these activities that people honestly in the city don't get access to, like a firing, like a gun range, or building out, you know, amenities like a conference center where we could have bigger groups and host maybe even corporate events or even like a conference of some sort in the future. So I think there's a lot of opportunity, which is what we're all looking for.
But it wasn't specifically laid out in the bylaws what the Bitcoin allocation could be used for.
That's exactly right. Yep. In fact, the bylaws don't even, the operating agreement doesn't even dictate that we keep a Bitcoin treasury. This was just saying, here's, you know, some of the managing members and, you know, they all have skin in the game, and this is what the intent is, to hold a Bitcoin treasury, which again sweetens the pot and, you know, makes it a less of a sting if you're going to either, you know, put capital that you otherwise would have put into Bitcoin into this, or you know, cashing in some Bitcoin in order to become a part of this, this community and this project.
I like it. Again, I find this whole topic fascinating. So I'm so glad that you were able to talk about this today, with us. If I was going to give any advice, I would say as quick as you can, put something in there, about the Bitcoin and what you can do with it. Cause if the price takes off, you know, people go through different situations, it'll just prevent any headache from happening, because of that. But I think it's, you know, the possibilities are endless depending on which avenue you want to do. You know, everyone gets their buy-in paid out after 5 years and they can do it again and just kind of have this. So it's a 5-year ROI and you break even, or just go ahead and allocate that Bitcoin to a different property purchase. Maybe there's something next. So again, the possibilities
are endless. And Coleman, I didn't mention that one, because it is on our radar, but, an adjacent property with an additional 30 acres is, it sounds like going to come up for sale this year. And, the way we have this structured is perfect for us to essentially create this Oklahoma entity is you can create like a series LLC. So you can have like series A, series B. And so what the intent is, you know, try to figure out, obviously we're going to go for some new capital. There's other people in DFW and even beyond that have said, hey, if you guys expand this or, you know, if there's ever room for investment here, or for me to become a member, I'd like to, you know, put me on your list. Love to be considered to be involved. And so, we are looking at that property and we would put it into a new Oklahoma series LLC separate from the first one. But then we could take in new investment. We could also have, you know, some of our Bitcoin treasury, to have access, you know, to capital to acquire the property. So we just need to kind of work that out. I think that would be, incredible because there, you know, there's another house and another 30 acres that are adjacent and it would also bring in, you know, potentially new members and new capital, which I think could be exciting.
Yeah. And again, you want to expand your network, right? You want to grow the community and do what you want to. And you know, just putting an additional 8 members on that 30 acres becomes really crowded all of a sudden. But if you could add an additional 12 members, but you have an additional 30 acres to put them on, it just makes things a little bit better and it just gives you more options, right? You're allowed to expand that. You could do more things with it. And then again, I find this whole thing fascinating. And again, you're not trying to do it all at once. You're doing it in little chunks and you're doing it smart. So again, that the downside risk is very minimal, which I think is important.
Yeah. And one thing I wanted to cover, I know we're coming up to the end and we also have to shout out to our sponsors, but one thing I did want to cover is in the operating agreement, there's things in there of, you know, how to get out. So you put your money into this black hole and, you know, you own some Bitcoin, you own this real estate, but you know, what happens if someone wants to move across the world or, you know, unfortunately needs cash because they have a medical problem or, you know, who knows? Like you could think of all kinds of reasons that people would need to get out. And so just kind of high level, the way we built it was, that members agreed to, be in this for at least a 3-year period. And if not, then there were ways to get out. But if you did, first right of refusal goes to other members to buy you out. So that way we could control who's, you know, who's in and we don't have some crazy person, joining us as a member who's going to create a whole bunch of trouble.
Really quick though, does that,
yeah, go ahead.
But you're capped at 25% of voting. So what happens if one of the big members gets out? And are you allowed to breach that threshold in order for a buyout to keep it internal or no?
Yeah. So then that person, like, let's just say, for example, I owned 5% and now I want to buy out the person who has 25%. Now I'm going to have a total of 30. Well, the way it reads is that I would still only have a max of 25% voting. So I can own more than 25%. I just can't vote more than 25% of the shares or they're not shares. Sorry, I'm going to get in trouble if I say that. It's the units. Kind of going on that vein. So if you were to get out within that 3-year period, again, first right of refusal goes to existing members, but there's also a penalty to you if you do that. And we all knew Bitcoin was going to go up. So the way we wrote this was that you would basically forfeit any appreciation of the price of the units, meaning we're not going to look at the increased valuation of the real estate, and we're not going to look at the increased dollar appreciation of the Bitcoin in the treasury. And so essentially what you would do is just within that 3-year period, just get paid out what you had put in. So you get your initial investment back and that's it. So that's your penalty for getting out early. And then how does that excess that's being forfeited get distributed? It actually goes back to the rest of the members. So essentially it gets put into the treasury, and it's just retained by the members that are left or the property. It essentially, you know, you had to build in some sort of way out, but also saying like, if you do this, you're probably forfeiting a good chunk. And at this point, obviously with Bitcoin's price appreciation, that is for sure the truth. And so, you know, nobody got into this. Like, we didn't want people coming in and being willy-nilly. We wanted people who were serious, who saw the vision for the property, and who weren't going to, you know, try to get in and get out. And we're not there to trade Bitcoin. We're there to, you know, improve our community and have this property, whether it's a bug out place or a place to gather or a place to learn or a place to create memories. That's what we got into it for. So, you have to build out, I guess my main point in all this is like, we've thought these things through. We talked them through with an attorney and we put them all in there because if you don't spell it out, then, you know, inevitably something is going to happen and you're not going to have provisions for those things. And then it creates fights and problems and issues. And nobody got into that to get into some big argument or legal battle or to blow up, you know, a great community of Bitcoiners that we have that are participating in it.
Yes. And I think that point has to be stressed on again. You have to lay out every scenario. It doesn't matter how unlikely it is. Again, if you don't mention it and it comes up, again, anybody's up for interpretation. So it's best to, again, hire a professional to help you through these things, think through every scenario and try and lay out a plan for it. Because you don't want to come to it in a crisis and then have to try and figure it out because you won't get anybody to agree on it at that point. So
what I can say to Coleman is I love that we have gone through the paces of creating this document. Because it gave people confidence that, you know, their investment was going to be protected and that the spirit of this project was going to, you know, come to fruition and thrive. What you find is if you have really vetted the people, and had these conversations and see how they're thinking, most people come back to that Bitcoin ethos. And so we don't expect for any of these things to really become issues. But again, the point here is you have to have them lined out, right? You got to protect your investment. You got to know what if the oops happened or the what if somebody turned crazy or, you know, whatever, somebody got mad at somebody else. But what we find is we're all in this together. And so people, to date, it's been really amicable. It's been, people have been very thoughtful and we've had great events out there, whether it was our halving party or the 100K Christmas party, in December. And we've seen a lot more people, you know, coming out and showing interest in Bitcoin and what we're doing up there, you know, because we have this property. And so I kind of pinch myself and say, man, I can't believe you know, was part of this or I did this, but the longer it goes on, the better it gets. And so, if you guys are looking at doing this, just want to say, I would, invite you again, follow the Orange Pill Retreat as we do development and stuff. We'll probably be putting it more posts on X. But if you do have questions or you even want to see a template, I'd be happy to have a conversation with you. I'd be happy to encourage other folks in other areas to be doing this because I think, not only is it good for you, your family, and your community, but it also is a great orange pilling tool for for just, you know, society at large. It's like, how do these people accomplish so much? Like, how are you achieving so many of the things that you want to achieve in your life? And then also you're doing projects like this, and it's all centered around Bitcoin. It's pretty remarkable. So I'm not patting myself on the back. I'm just truly impressed every day with the caliber of people that, you know, are in these spaces, are in the local meetups, and the things that you can accomplish when it's not just you as a lone wolf. The things you can do together with your community.
No, I think you deserve a pat on the back for this. This is, again, it's new. People aren't really doing it. And again, others are going to look towards this model to try and replicate it and choose, pick and choose what they want to incorporate. So, but before we do start wrapping up the show, I do want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo, Restocker Ammo at blacksheepammo.com, Punch Plate, Stamped Receipt Phrase on a Metal Plate. If you have questions with that, look what's going on in California, with those fires. If you have your seed phrase on a paper, on a piece of paper, it's going to burn up in a fire. Go to punchplate.com, stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms and tactical training at paladintowertactics.com. And Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining. Use the code BTCVETS for 5% off. And if you pay with Bitcoin, you get an additional 10% off, so potential for 15 off your order, solosatoshi.com. Bitcoin Alaska, July 5th and 6th. Family-friendly Bitcoin conference. It's in Juneau. Alaska's amazing in the summer. You're not going to want to miss this. Check them out, bitcoinalaska.org. Secure your lodging, secure your tickets. These things will go very quick. And last but not least, Cold Card. We talk about it. Make sure you go and treat your Bitcoin like it's worth 10 to 100 times what it's worth right now. I love Cold Card. I've talked about them since day one of the show. They're my go-to hardware wallet. I have a link up in the nest. Go ahead and click on that link. Support BVs, coinkite.ca. So Bob, again, I have a ton of questions still, so we'll have to do this again. Maybe get you on the video podcast. So we can go ahead and get some visuals and see some things. But was there any other final comments or anything that you wanted to make? I don't have anyone sending me questions, right now. But was there anything else you'd like to hit on before we get wrapping things up?
It's always nice to, have a bunch of dumbstruck space participants. So sorry, I droned on, but I do want to say, man, I think the biggest thing that I've, as I reflect on it, is it's truly one. It's truly incredible, the community that you can build. And I'm not responsible for this, but it is truly incredible. Like when you hang out with people who are all trying to get better, what you can achieve together. And there's resources out there. And I think, you know, for a long time, I've just been around for a while, and I see a lot of distrust. Naturally in the Bitcoin community. And that's not really a bad thing, right? It's this whole idea of, don't trust, verify. And I think that's important. And, you know, we talk about, you know, not being a target and, you know, thinking through things and finding other people that can, give you, kind of just another eyeball at a situation. I think those things are important. But I think what we're seeing is as more and more people adopt Bitcoin, people are trusting, and there's a feedback loop in the communities, Bitcoin communities. It's this idea of if someone's coming around consistently and they're genuine and they're, even if they don't provide real value to the network, like the idea is, you know, if these people actually become your friends, they're probably not going to screw you, right? Because the idea is if I do, then I just lose all my friends, right? I lose my entire friend group. So I would encourage you, like, get involved and find good people, and you can accomplish a lot of things. And then the second thing and lastly would just be, man, I'm grateful for my community and what we've been able to accomplish, but I'm grateful for Bitcoin veterans and just, like, this space to be able to talk on with you guys, hopefully as many days as I can. And I think it's a great thing that we're doing here. Like, whether it's this topic or many others, I hope you guys all get value out of the things that, you know, we're bringing up and the things that we discuss, the guests that we come on. And I would encourage you too to, you know, if you're shy, totally understand. But if you want to give input or have questions, please feel free to request to come up on stage. And, you know, we're always happy. Like, I think we can learn from each other. So we're always happy to see what is going through people's minds, the questions that we have. And hopefully we can solve some of these things together.
Yeah, just give me 1 second. I've got the lawn guys right outside my window. Bob, anything else you want to just hit on really quick for like just a minute?
Yeah, I guess again, maybe it's, you know, sometimes people have to hear things multiple times. I know I do. Sometimes things, you know, you don't put as much important or they don't sink in, but, I can't tell you how important it is to get around good people. Like, if you don't go to meetups and it's not your thing, maybe you're an introvert, you don't get energy from being around other people. Like, I've seen so many people, just do like find out things that they didn't know they could find out about, like topics. You know, some people can just learn by like watching a YouTube video, but like there's so many great people out in these meetups at the in the communities. And even if you're not someone who's going to go and, you know, buy a property with other people, I do think that you're missing out on a huge piece of Bitcoin if you are not regularly engaging with this community. And, you know, maybe you live out in the middle of nowhere. Totally understand. Might be pretty difficult to get to some of the meetups. But if you don't have one that you can go to that's close, start one up. There's so much that can come from community, and if you don't succeed initially, keep trying, because there's more people coming. There's more people with questions. There's more people that need help, and there's more people with a lot of different viewpoints and you know, occupations, whatever it would be, right? Like we're all, one big, crazy world with a lot of unique people, but you can learn from those people. And if you're missing the community piece of Bitcoin, I'd encourage you to get out there and find people, because you can accomplish really great things.
Yep. Build it and everybody will come. And if you're in a remote location, go ahead and just start a live stream and just host it like that. There's really no excuses for today for not being able to host your own meetup. And make sure you go up there. Again, we're all trying to build that community. We're trying to build the Bitcoin ecosystem, and you can't do that by just hoping it's going to take place. You've got to go up there, be the change you want to be the change you want to see. So that was a great closing remarks, Bob. And again, thank you so much for coming up here today and just talking about this. I really enjoyed this conversation. I know there's a lot of guys in the back channels that had questions and enjoyed this as well. And so just thank you for everybody in here who stayed through, and hopefully this answered a lot of questions for you. But make sure you tune in tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll do this again. We'll cover some news, have some discussions. Probably going to circle back to this a little bit. Again, I think it's just absolutely fascinating. We will have the video podcast tonight. We'll be live streaming on X, YouTube, and Noster. So check it out. We have a new time for that, though. It's at 9 p.m. Eastern time. So 9 p.m. instead of 7. Make sure to tune in for that. I think it's just guys talking and going over some new things and looking forward to what we do in 25. But that's it. Thank you, everybody who tuned in. I want you to have a fantastic day. Go out there and absolutely crush it, but don't shitcoin. It's not like having your cake and someone else eating it.